Devaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 54, Chapter entitled The Marriage of Krishna and Rukmini, Text Number 46. Nātmano anyena samyogo vyogash chasata sati tad detu twat tat prasiddhir durig rupabhyam yata rabe natmanonyena samyogo vyogascha sata sati tadetu twat tat prasidir Dhrigrupabhyam yatarave Natmanonyena samyogo Vyogascha sata sati Tadetu twat tat prasidir Dhrigrupabhyam yatarave Natmanonyena samyogo Vyogascha sata sati Tadetu twat tat prasidir Dhrigrupabhyam yatarave Natmano. Not for the self. Anyena. With anything else. Samyoga. Contact. Viyoga. Separation. Cha. End. Asata. With that which is insubstantial. Sati, O discriminating one. Tat, from it, the self. Hetu twat, because of originating. Tat, by it, the self. Prasiddhe, because of being revealed. Durik, with the sense of vision. Rupabhyam, the visible form. Yata, as. Rabe, the sun. Translation of Prabhupada by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. O intelligent lady, the soul never undergoes contact with or separation from insubstantial material objects, because the soul is their very origin and illuminator. Thus the soul resembles the sun, which never comes in contact with nor separates from the sense of sight and what is seen. Translation responsibly. O intelligent lady, the soul never undergoes contact with or separation from insubstantial material objects, because the soul is their very origin and illuminator. Thus the soul resembles the sun, which neither comes in contact with nor separates from
the
sense of sight
and
what is seen.
Purport.
As explained in the previous text, the conditioned soul ignorantly assumes to be the material body and thus rotates in the cycle of birth and death. In fact, matter and spirit are co-energies of the original source of everything, the Supreme Lord, who is the Absolute Truth. As Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita 7.5, Jiva Bhutam Mahabahu Yayedam Dayate Jagat. The material world is sustained by the living being's desire to exploit it. The material world is like a prison. Criminals are determined to commit crimes, and thus the government finds it necessary to maintain a prison system. Similarly, the Supreme Lord maintains the material universes because the conditioned souls are determined to rebel against him and try to enjoy without his loving cooperation. Thus here the phrase tad de tu tuat is used to describe the soul, meaning that the soul is the cause of matter assembling itself into a material body. The term tat prasidde indicates the soul is the cause of the body's being perceived. And the same term also indicates that this fact is well known to the enlightened. Besides its given meaning, the word Atmana in this verse may indicate the Supreme Soul, in which case the term Tad De Tu Tuat indicates that Lord Krishna expands his personal potency and thus manifests the material universe. Since the Lord exists eternally in his pure spiritual body, he never becomes material, as indicated here. Om Gyan Timarandasya Gidanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Vedantikam Vancha Kaupata Rubyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishna Vebhyo Namonamaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Ram Rama Hare Hare. So in the Vedic literatures there are three basic subject matters. What are the three divisions within the Vedas, as is taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita? What's that?
Karma,
Jnana and Bhakti. Yeah, they're three divisions, but that's not the three that we're thinking of. Not that. There's another, also other divisions also.
Abhideya.
Yeah, Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana, like that. So it's true that the Vedas are also three subject matters in the Vedas are Bhakti, Karma and Jnana. That's true. But also another division is Sambandha Jnana, Abhideya Jnana and Prayojana Tattva or Jnana, like that. So the Vedas discuss these three types of knowledge, or the three divisions. One is Sambandha. Sambandha means relationship. It means the relationship between the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Ishwara, the Jiva, which means these expanded parts and parcels, all of us, the liberated Jivas and the conditioned Jivas, and the Prakriti. Prakriti means the energies of the Lord. Right? How does the Lord relate with his energies? Both the spiritual energies and the material energies. Like that. So that is Sambandha Jnana. That's why in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the introduction of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says that the Bhagavatam discusses the absolute truth. It doesn't just discuss God. Because that is not full Sambandha Jnana. That is not full knowledge of the relationship. If you only understand just God, then you don't understand the absolute truth. You understand something about God, but you don't understand the absolute truth. God is more than just himself, right? God is himself, the jivas, and his prakritis, his energies, the spiritual energies and the marginal energies and the material energy. So therefore it says that in terms of his energies, his shaktis, then there are three divisions, three main divisions, tatashta shakti, bahiranga shakti, and antaranga shakti, which means the internal potency. And the internal potency means all of his internal energies. And the internal energies are divided into three categories also, three main categories, right? Hladini shakti, samvit shakti, and sandini shakti, right? Which means there are three main energies which constitute his spiritual energy. In other words, eternality, knowledge, and bliss. Now, Hladini Shakti, the bliss potency of the Lord, is personified, first of all, as, and primarily as, Srimati Radharani. Right? She is the personification of bliss, of Krishna's Hladini Shakti, or Krishna's bliss potency. That is, Srimati Radharani is the provider, the principal provider of God's bliss. Why is Krishna always in bliss? Because he has the association of Srimati Radharani. Right? She is his pleasure potency. And she has the potency, the supreme potency, to give Krishna bliss or pleasure. And then all other entities who are to give Krishna pleasure are simply expansions of her. Right? You see, unlimited gopis are expansions of Srimati Radharani. All of Krishna's queens in Dwarka are expansions, ultimately, of Srimati Radharani. All the Lakshmis in the unlimited Vaikuntha planets are expansions of Srimati Radharani. And then the other two parts of the internal potency, Sandini Shakti and Samvit potency, means knowledge and eternality. This is expanding from Lord Balaram. Because Balaram is Krishna's first expansion or incarnation. One time Prabhupada said he was in the car driving to Calcutta from to Mayapur from Calcutta. He was in the car with Giriraj Swami and Tamal Krishna Maharaj and maybe a few other disciples. And Prabhupada said, who is stronger, Krishna or Balaram? What is the answer?
Krishna.
Balaram. Okay. So why is Krishna stronger? Yeah, so Prabhupada gave that answer because the devotee said Balaram is stronger. Because Bala means strength, right? And he is the older brother of Krishna. He is the protector of Krishna. So some of the devotees said Balaram is stronger. And Prabhupada said, no, Krishna is stronger. Right? Because you see, if you go to Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan, you see Lord Balaram is resting his arm on Krishna's shoulder. Right? On that arm, he's resting like that on Krishna's shoulder, right? So therefore, Prabhupada was explaining as the Srimad Bhagavatam explains, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the source of all the other incarnations, and the first expansion of Krishna is Balaram, and from Balaram, all the other expansions of Vishnu Tattva come. So therefore, Balaram expands the potency of Samvit, or the potency of knowledge, right? How is it that Krishna knows everything? Right? How does Krishna know everything? Because he's everywhere. Yeah. So how is he everywhere? As Paramatma, as the Super Soul, right? So from Lord Balaram expands different incarnations, and then finally Super Soul comes. So that's from Balaram, expanding ultimately from Krishna to Balaram, and then Super Soul comes. So through Super Soul, Krishna has Jnana Shakti, or he knows everything, because Krishna is everywhere. Like that. So that's how he's able to know everything. And then his other Shakti is called Sandini Shakti, which means eternality. So it means that everything which is made of spirit is eternal. Spirit is eternal. So therefore the whole spiritual world, it is said that Goloka Vrindavan and all the Vaikuntha planets, everything in the spiritual world is expanding from Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram is the origin of the entire spiritual world. And you'll see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is explained that Krishna's flute, right, Krishna's bed, Krishna's crown, Krishna's seat, his simhasana, everything, that is an expansion of Lord Balaram. So by Lord Balaram, then everything is expanded, the entire spiritual world is expanded, and because of his potency, which is given to him by Krishna, everything is eternal in the spiritual world. So that is the spiritual energy. And then there is the Tatastha Shakti. Right? The Tatastha Shakti means the marginal potency. They are the jivas. Now Prabhupada points out that most of the jivas never leave the spiritual world. Most jivas never come to the material world. Right? It is only us who come to the material world. Why did we come to the material world? Because we're envious of Krishna, yes. Ultimately because we like trouble. You enjoy trouble. You enjoy being naughty. You enjoy being separate from Krishna. So therefore Krishna said go. Like that. If that's what you want, go and do it for millions of lifetimes. And when you learn your lesson, then you can come back to the spiritual world. But otherwise you have to stay in that material world for as long as you want to be separate from me. So that is Tatastha Shakti. Tatastha means marginal. Right? It means just like the beach is called Tatastha. Between the land, the margin between the land and the water, the ocean. So sometimes the beach is covered, sometimes it's uncovered. So sometimes the jiva is covered by the material energy, and sometimes he's uncovered by the material energy. He's in the spiritual state like that. So the jivas, many of them, most of them, are nitya siddha, which means they're eternally liberated. But some are called nitya bhada, which means that is us, eternally conditioned. Right? We've been in the material world for so long that it's practically like we've been here eternally. We haven't been here eternally, but it's been so long now, it's eternal. How many lifetimes have you been here? How many lifetimes have you been here? Millions. Millions of lifetimes we've been in this material world. Maybe even billions. It's inconceivable how long we've been here. And what is it that we're attached to that keeps us in this material world? Sense gratification, and especially sex life. We stay in this material world for millions of lifetimes just for a little bit of sex life, right? The enjoyment of being able to, for men, the feeling of being able to dominate women, right? That's just that psychological state of being able to be the purush or the dominator of women, right? And women wanting to be enjoyed by men. And enjoying all the facilities which are given by males. And that keeps you in the material world forever. Because you want to be the Purush. You want to be the enjoyer separate from Krishna. You want to be Krishna. That is the envy. That is the state of consciousness. So if you want to be Krishna, stay in the material world. Krishna says stay there. Right? But if you want to be his servant, Krishna says then come back immediately. But you have to be servant. You have to be pure. You can't think I am the Purush. You can't go back to the spiritual world and want to enjoy Krishna's gopis. Right? Because you go back to the spiritual world, Krishna's having Rasa Leela, and then you try to grab one of the gopis and start dancing, and Krishna will immediately go to the material world. Right? That is not the place for that kind of activity. Right? That envy cannot be in the spiritual world. So therefore Krishna sends us to the material universe like that. So is the spiritual energy, the marginal energy, and then the external energy. The external energy is called the Bahiranga Shakti. It is called the material energy. And the material energy is the opposite of the spiritual energy. The spiritual energy is Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. But the material energy is the opposite. It is not Sat, it is Asat. Right? Instead of being eternal, it is temporary. Right? It is not chit, it is not full of knowledge, it is achit, which means it is full of ignorance. And it is not ananda, it is not bliss, it is near ananda, which means misery, suffering, right? Complete suffering. The material world is just complete suffering. Right? And if you think that you're happy, that is called Maya. Right? Because you cannot be happy. Right? And if you think you're happy, that's just a temporary state. It's just temporary. In due course of time, that happiness will disappear very quickly. Like that. One time Prabhupada was walking in the Royal Botanical Gardens here in Melbourne. And Prabhupada was making this point. He said, in the material world, there is no happiness. And the devotees were questioning Prabhupada. No happiness, Prabhupada? Not even a little bit of happiness? And Prabhupada was saying, no happiness in the material world. And devotees kept saying to Prabhupada, but Prabhupada, there must be some happiness. And Prabhupada said, no happiness. And then he walked past the lake in the botanical gardens and he saw some ducks were playing in the water. And then Prabhupada said, okay, there's a little bit of happiness. But what's that? You're a duck. You know? Would you trade your body that you currently have for a duck? Aravind, would you like to be a duck? Why not? Huh? You get to quack. Right? People feed you. Right? You're allowed to swim all day. You can do what you don't have to go to school. Right? You don't want to be a duck? Why not? Yeah, because who wants to be a duck? You think a duck's a good life? Right? It's not a good life being a duck. No. It's not a good life being any species of life in this material world. Right? So there's a little bit of happiness in this material world, but it's not really happiness. Compared to the misery, of being a duck, then the happiness of being a duck, you can't measure it. Right? You get a little bit of happiness and a ton of sense of gratification. That's the material world. There are many analogies or many stories in the Vedas which describe the suffering which is in the material world, how it's actually suffering like that. So then we have these three energies. So these three energies, the internal energy, the external energy, and the marginal energy, like that. So this is Sambandha Gyan, right? This is what the Vedas discuss, this knowledge, right, of how everything relates. That is Sambandha Gyan, right? So therefore the Bhagavatam discusses all of this. That's why the Bhagavatam is the Paramahamsa Samhita. It is said to be the scripture for Paramahamsas, for the topmost personalities, the topmost human beings. Right? Because it gives the most knowledge. It gives all the knowledge. It gives complete knowledge, complete sambandha. Right? Other scriptures do not give complete sambandha. Other philosophies do not give complete sambandha. Right? You will not hear from other teachers complete sambandha, but in the Bhagavatam you'll hear complete knowledge, perfect knowledge. So, the Vedas discuss first Abhideya and then secondly, first sambandha and then secondly, Abhideya. Abhideya means the process, the guide of how to get to God. Because first of all, you have sambandha, right? But once you have the sambandha, now you have to know how to use that sambandha or how to apply that knowledge. Right? That's called abhideya. So you see in the Bhagavatam, it describes all these subject matters. Right? There's a certain section of the Bhagavatam which describes sambandha or all the knowledge of how the energies of the Lord and the Lord relate. Just like here, who is speaking? Lord Balaram is speaking. So Lord Balaram is called the Adi Guru. Right? He is the original spiritual master. Lord Nityananda is the original spiritual master. So he is speaking here, Sambandha Gyan. So parts of the Bhagavatam are Sambandha. And then other parts of the Bhagavatam are Abhideya. Abhideya means how to practice devotional service so to reach Krishna. Right? You have the knowledge. I am Krishna's eternal servant. Krishna is the Supreme Lord. But how do I relate to Krishna? That is called Abhideya, or the process of how to please Krishna. How to please Krishna must be learnt from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. You cannot speculate. Right? Krishna is not pleased by speculation. It's just like if you are cooking for the deities in the kitchen, Krishna doesn't appreciate speculations. Right? Do you appreciate when someone speculates on you when they're cooking? Like you go to someone's house and you say, what did you cook today? Right? And they say, well, I cooked, I've never cooked it before. Right? I just made it up. I hope it tastes all right. Right? How do you feel? Right? You feel like going to Gopal's. You feel like, okay, fine. Right? I hope this one works. Right? Good chance it's not going to. So Krishna doesn't, he doesn't like speculation. Right? Krishna's a person. He's the supreme person. He's the greatest person. Why speculate on Krishna? Why go in the kitchen if you don't know how to cook something and speculate? My spiritual master, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, used to say this because his disciples would cook for him. And then, you know, the guru comes and the disciple thinks, let me cook something really far out for the guru. Right? So then one devotee said, I'll cook gnocchi. Right? You know what gnocchi is? Gnocchi is Italian pasta. It's like a stuffed pasta ball. Very far out. Right? It's a very delicious preparation. But this devotee who was cooking it, she'd never cooked it before. Right? So she thought, I'll cook something very far out for the guru. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, do you know how to cook it? Right? She said, no, I've never cooked it before. He said, then don't speculate on me. Right? I'm your guru. Don't speculate on me. Cook something you know how to cook. Right? Krishna's a person. Practice. That's why it's called sadhana bhakti. Practice. In your home. Speculate on your husband. That's why Krishna gave him to you. To eat all of your bad cooking. So that you get better. So that you can then cook for Krishna properly. Right? That's what it's for. Not really. Right? You can delete that when you put it on the internet, that part. But this is the fact, right? First you have to practice. Sadhana means you practice, right? And when you're good at it, then you do it for Krishna. Right? And then you have to learn it from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Right? So when you're cooking, what is the Shastra? What is the Shastra for cooking?
Korma's cookbooks.
Korma's cookbooks. Korma's cookbooks or Adi Raja's cookbooks or Jamuna's cookbook. Or, right? You go to the Shastra. Right? Why speculate? You think you're better than the gurus? That cookbook of Jamuna, Mataji, that big thick cookbook, which you know, she put out, what's called Lord Krishna's Cuisine, that at one point in time when that came out, that was the number one cookbook on earth. It was the biggest selling cookbook on earth. Right? It's a very powerful. And that cookbook, you know how she learned all those recipes? She was Prabhupada's cook when Prabhupada was travelling around India between 1970 and 1974 or something like that. Right? Do you think that's all speculation? Do you think Jamuna just got there one day and thought, you know, let me just make up a whole bunch of recipes and make a cookbook and then I'll make lots of money? Right? Not at all. Right? She learned from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Wherever they would go with Prabhupada, if someone knew how to cook something very nice, Prabhupada would immediately say to her, learn that. Go to the kitchen and learn that from the Mataji who was cooking or from the devotee who was cooking. Go and learn that. Right? So that's Sadhu. It came from Sadhu. And everything that she cooked, she would offer it to Prabhupada. Prabhupada would taste it. And Prabhupada, who was a Nitya Siddha, right, who was a cook for one of Krishna's cooks in the spiritual world, who came here to teach us devotional service, then he would say, this is good or it's not good, it should be like this or it should not be like this. And Shastra, right? And then it's all written down and then it becomes Shastra, like that. So that's how we should learn. Right? There has to be a parampara system, right? There has to be a disciplic succession in every part of devotional service. There has to be a disciplic succession. Just like in worshipping the deity, right? There's a way that we worship Radha Ballabha here in Melbourne. Right, there's a standard, right, and it comes in disciplic succession, right. In 1975, you know, right there on that altar, Prabhupada installed Gaur Nitai. Prabhupada installed, and Prabhupada did the first aarti for Gaur Nitai, right. That is disciplic succession, and the standards which Prabhupada set up in this temple, right, through Balaram Prabhu, through Korma Prabhu, which then have been passed on to Aniruddha Prabhu and Chincharupa Mataji. Right, and then we'll continue for thousands of years to come. Right? This disciplic succession, this parampara, must not be broken. Right? That is called abhideya. That is the process of how to please Krishna. You think you know how to please Krishna better than the disciplic succession. Right? Are you so arrogant that you think you know how to please Krishna better than the gurus, the sadhu and the shastra? Right? That is not abhideya jnana. Right? Abhideya jnana means the process, how to please Krishna. Like that. Just like I remember many many years ago, maybe 15 years ago, one Indian gentleman, he came to the temple and he left a bag on the altar with all nice, what we thought were nice offerings for the deities. So he brought what he thought was the best things for the deities. So then we took it into the devotees took it into the paraphernalia room, they opened it up, right? And one thing he brought for the deities was cigars, right? Because he thought that, you know, in this day and age, if you really want to please someone, then you buy them cigars. It's considered a very significant offering, right? It's someone's birthday, so you buy them cigars. It's like common amongst uncivilized, you know, people, you know, who think they're civilized. So he thought he was doing something good. His attitude was to please Krishna. But did he please Krishna? No. So therefore it is rejected. It's not Abhideya. Devotional service must have two elements to be successful. It must be done with a favorable attitude towards Krishna, and it must be pleasing to Krishna. These two elements must be there. Otherwise it's not pure devotional service. Right? Rupa Goswami says, devotional service must be anushilanam. Right? It must be pleasing to Krishna. It must be done with a favorable attitude. These two elements must be there. Just like the example is given of Kamsa. Kamsa pleased Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? Because he fought with Krishna. Right? So Krishna got pleasure from that fighting. But was his attitude favorable? No. So therefore it's not pure devotional service. Right? And Mother Yashoda, the Acharyas give the other example. Mother Yashoda, she... what did Kamsa do? He...
Yeah.
So he pleased Krishna. Yeah, she wanted to please Krishna. Okay, she was favorable towards Krishna, but she did not please him. Mother Yashoda had a favorable attitude towards Krishna, but she did not please him. Right? Because she was churning the butter. Right? You read in the earlier part of the 10th canto in the Krishna book, she was churning the butter, and then Krishna came to her and he said, Mayi, Mayi, and he was pulling on her. Sari, and he said, dude, dude, right? He wanted to drink her milk, right? And then she began to breastfeed him. But then she saw that the milk on the stove, on the cooking pot, it was boiling over. So she put Krishna down to go and save the milk, right? To please Krishna, right? So although her attitude was favorable, she was doing it for Krishna, but it didn't please Krishna. Krishna was not pleased by that, right? But then the Acharyas give a further comment. They say, actually, he was pleased. Right? But at least in this instance, they give that example. So devotional service must have these two elements. It must be pleasing to Krishna and favorable to Krishna. That is called Abhideya. And that is what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. Right? How to please Krishna favorably. Right? In the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj says, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam Archanam, Vandanam, Dasham, Sakyam, Atma, Nivedanam. These are 9 ways in which to please Krishna. And Rupa Goswami has taken those 9 and he's expanded them into 64. Right? These are 64 ways which you will please Krishna. 64 ways to do devotional service to please Krishna. Right? That is Abhideya, that is the process like that. And then the Vedas speak of Prayojana. Prayojana means the goal. Or the essence. What is the essence of the Vedas? What is the goal of the Vedas? What is it that we're meant to ultimately achieve in terms of our practice of devotional service? It is prema. Right? It is love for Krishna. That is the essence of life. That is the goal. Right? Because it is said in the Vedas, Ananda Mayo Vyasat, which means every living entity is looking for bliss, right? We are motivated, right? Everyone is motivated. Why does any living entity do anything, right? Yeah, because you want to be happy, right? Because you want to enjoy, right? If there's no enjoyment, you won't do anything. Just like all the people today, right? Thousands of people are currently flooding into Melbourne, into the city, from every direction: southeastern arterial, eastern arterial, Westgate Bridge, yeah, airport, the airport for Tullamarine Freeway. There are just thousands of people are flooding into the sea. Why? Because they're motivated by enjoyment. They want to enjoy because they work hard and they know they'll get some money, and with that money they can enjoy. Right? But what's the equation? What's the sacrifice? Right? 5 days of torture for 2 days of enjoyment. Right? Is it worth it? Right? So this is the motivation. Every living entity, every soul is motivated by enjoyment. Right? We desire to enjoy. But in the material world, you only deal with sukha and dukkha. Krishna says in the Gita, Matra spashas tu kunteya shitoshna sukha dukkada. Right? You're just dealing with sukha and dukkha in the material world. What we call happiness and what we call distress. Material happiness, material distress. That's all you deal with in the material world. But that's not what the soul is looking for. Right? The soul is looking for ananda. Ananda means bliss. That's why no one's ever satisfied in the material world, because you don't get bliss from the material energy. You can't get bliss from the material energy. Right? It doesn't matter what you do with the material energy, you will not get blissful. You will not become blissful. You can only get blissful from contacting the internal energy. You only get blissful from serving Krishna. Otherwise, it's not possible to become blissful. Right? So therefore, the jiva is looking for that bliss, right? And how is that bliss attained? How is it fully attained? It is attained through prema, right? You have to love Krishna. Because in Chaitanya Charitamrita it says that the nature of Krishna prema is Hladini Shakti. What does Hladini Shakti mean? The pleasure potency. As we said before, Srimati Radharani is persona of Krishna's pleasure prema. So the nature of Krishna prema, of love for Krishna, when you love Krishna, the nature of that is Hladini Shakti. It is bliss. And then the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, the nature of Hladini Shakti is what?
To give bliss to Krishna.
To give bliss to Krishna?
Service for Krishna.
It serves to Krishna, yeah, that's true. But specifically, how does it say it? Right? The nature of Krishna prema is Hladini Shakti, and the nature of Hladini Shakti is Krishna prema. Right? Right? Think about that very deeply. Right? The nature of Krishna prema is, it is full of bliss. If you love Krishna, you will get unlimited bliss in return. And the nature of that unlimited bliss, right, is that it will make you love Krishna more. Right? I was reading yesterday in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, in the eighth chapter, near the end of the eighth chapter, Prabhupada says, how does Krishna reciprocate with the devotees? Right? Devotees do so much service for Krishna. Right? And then how does Krishna reciprocate? Prabhupada says, by his enchanting smile. Right? Krishna smiles at the devotees. Right? And by that enchanting smile, that is their payment for all their service. And then Prabhupada points out, this is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that when the devotee serves Krishna and Krishna smiles, the devotee becomes full of bliss by having Krishna's reciprocation, his smile upon them. And that devotee becomes more blissful and wants to do more service for Krishna. And then Krishna sees that devotee is more blissful now, and in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it describes the relationship between Radha and Krishna, right? And Radharani is the best servant of Krishna. So it says that when Krishna sees that Radharani is more blissful and more beautiful, right? Because some people become beautiful when they smile, right? When someone smiles, they become more beautiful, right? So Radharani smiles more because she's in so much bliss from seeing Krishna happy. And then Krishna's bliss increases unlimitedly because Radharani is so beautiful and blissful. Right? And then Radharani sees Krishna is so satisfied, right, and so blissful himself that she becomes more blissful. And this competition goes on eternally. Right? That's why Lord Chaitanya says, Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam. It's an ever-increasing, ever-expanding ocean of bliss. That is the pleasure you get from spiritual life. In the material world, you don't get an ever-increasing, ever-expanding ocean of bliss. Right? Just like in the material world, you go somewhere, right, and you're really enjoying yourself. Right? But then after a while, someone says, you know, you're with a group of friends and you're really enjoying yourself. Someone says, this is boring. Let's go somewhere else. So everyone goes, okay. So everyone gets up and they all go somewhere else. You go to Luna Park. So you go to Luna Park. You can't stay at Luna Park forever. Right? How many times can you go around the roller coaster? Right? Go around 10, 15 times, you get sick of it. Let's go somewhere else. Okay? So, okay, we all go somewhere else. So then you just keep moving around, right? Because you're not getting bliss. But in the spiritual world, the bliss is ever increasing. Right? That is the nature of prema, or love for Krishna. So the only way that we can be fully satisfied is to love Krishna, and that is the essence of life. That is the essence of the Vedas. That is the goal, the prayojana, like that. So the Bhagavatam discusses these three subject matters, sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. So here, Lord Balaram is speaking sambandha gyan, like that. Because the knowledge is where it all begins. You need the knowledge in the beginning of the relationship. But then, once you have the knowledge, then you have to do something. Right? You can't just think that Krishna is nice. You have to do something for Krishna. You have to do some service for Krishna. And when you do service, Prabhupada says, what is the barometer of bhakti? Yeah, if the deities are smiling. Right? Prabhupada said, how do you measure how successful your devotional service is? Because when you come before the deities, are they smiling at you? Right? Prabhupada said, this is how you measure. Right? Is your devotional service successful? Is Prabhupada smiling at you? Are the deities smiling at you? When you look at the picture of your guru, is he smiling at you? Do you feel reciprocation? Do you feel they're satisfied? You know? Quite often I come before all the deities and they all smile at me. Right? Except one. Lord Nityananda. He gives me a hard time. Right? Because he's the guru. Right? He's the guru. So, you know, you may please everyone else because they're, you know, very merciful, but the guru will always see, but you have to improve in this area. That's the guru's duty. The guru's duty is to point out where you need to improve. That is his mercy. So Lord Nityananda is very merciful to me. He always, everyone else might be smiling on the altar when I look at him. He says, don't get puffed up. Right? You think you're doing so much good service, right? But what about all this? What about all those things in your heart I can see? Right? You have to work on yourself. Go and work, and then come back tomorrow. Keeps us humble. Guru keeps us humble. That's the whole point. So we'll stop here, and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
I'm sorry, I have to first explain what I understand, and then you have to fill me in when I don't, because otherwise I can't do it. It concerns the before, which I'll elaborate in a minute. The way I understood that the super soul comes in as from the spiritual world and remains until we return to the spiritual world in many years, and then it is accidental. If the super soul is 8 inches and dwells in the heart, and the soul is, you know, 1.5 times the tip of the head. Now, what I can't understand is that there's an intelligent lady, the soul never undergoes contact or separation from insubstantial material objects because the soul is the very origin. Now, what I couldn't understand is if it's never in contact with material energy, what is it that activates us? You know, what is it that leaves at the time of death? And how can, if it never is in contact with material energy, how is it covered? Because very often you hear that the soul is covered.
Yeah, because it describes in the Bhagavatam, as we've studied in the third canto recently, then when the jivas are impregnated into the material energy by Mahavishnu, then the first thing they come in contact is false ego. Right? So by false ego is very subtle. Out of all the elements, it's very subtle. Earth is the grossest of the elements. Right? Earth is very perceivable. Right? And then water, fire, air, and ether, each one becomes more subtle. So ether, you cannot actually see ether. The only way you can detect ether is by sound, by hearing. And then mind and intelligence are even more subtle than sound, right, than ether, or even more subtle. In other words, you can't see the mind, right? You can hear it think, but you can't touch it, you can't see it. And the intelligence is even more subtle than the mind. You know the intelligence is working because it discriminates, but you can't actually perceive it. And the false ego is the most subtle of all the elements. In other words, the false ego is covering us, right? And it gives us this perception that we are lords, that we are enjoyers separate from Krishna, but you can't actually perceive it. So because of the false ego, The false ego covers the soul, surrounds the soul, doesn't actually contact the soul or touch the soul. But because it's surrounding the soul, then we identify with the material body, with matter, like that. So we don't actually contact, as the Bhagavad Gita describes. The soul never contacts the material energy. But through false ego, he identifies with the material energy. That's all. The soul activates the body.
So it never is in contact with the material energy, it activates.
Yeah, it's like, the sun doesn't contact the earth. Right? The sun physically, like the planet, does not contact the earth. But the sun's energy contacts the earth. Right? And through the sunlight, then the earth, water is evaporated and so forth. And then we get energy. We get electricity is just a transformation of the sun's energy. Right? So it's just the energy which is making everything operate. So the soul, the energy of the soul, because the soul was at this point in time 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair in our heart, somewhere in our heart. It's just like a little spark. But that spark is permeating all over the body, right? Because we can feel consciousness in every part of our body. We're conscious of every part of our body. But that's all happening in the soul's energy.
The energy spark. Okay. Like that. And somebody else told me that the soul is brighter than millions of suns. Is that not true?
It says like that, yeah.
The soul and the super soul. Our soul is brighter than millions of suns.
It does mention, the soul is very bright. When he comes out, sometimes you'll see the Bhagavad Gita, the soul comes out of the body. Like with the story of Chitraketu and the story of Shishupal. So at that point in time, I can't remember what it says, but it does say the sun is very powerful. The soul is very powerful. So how bright it is, I'm not sure, but it's very. It's effulgent. Because spirit is effulgent, like that. Any other questions or comments?
We can see how Balaram is instructing Rukmini, because Rukmini is disturbed. Krishna was ready to kill Rukmini, and Rukmini is asking Krishna for forgiveness. We know how Arjuna, he also was in that situation temporarily. Krishna's Maya energy.
Mm.
So is it also same with Rukmini? That he is in that kind of situation, that is lamenting for his brother?
Yeah, it could be like that. Or Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out in the Krishna Samhita, he says that even for like pure devotees or even very advanced devotees, when they come in this material world and you get born in a particular family in a particular country, he says the nature of the soul is to have an identity. The soul. So when you're in the spiritual world, you think Vrindavan is my village, right? And this family I'm in is my family. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that's the nature of the soul. So when he comes in the material world and he gets a body and then he has a family and he has a country, Bhaktivinoda Thakur even says that the devotee, the very advanced devotee, but he still identifies because that's the nature of the soul. So Rukmini is her brother. So even though he's a demon, but still it's her brother. So, she says to Krishna, please, he's my brother. Please look after him. And Balaram says, well, he's not a very nice guy, So, and then Balaram starts preaching to her. So they're having some, discussion back and forth. So, something to do with Krishna's yoga maya. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur also makes that comment. So then we can weigh it all up and balance it, something in between. Like that.
You don't know what is the relation between Shambhu and false ego? How to control false ego? By serving Lord Shiva, you tell us something about it.
Yeah, you asked this question 1 month ago.
Still not very clear.
Yeah, you asked the same question. So, the Lord Shiva controls the false ego. He is the master, the lord of the false ego. So as Vaishnavas, because Vaishnavas, we worship Vishnu or Krishna, right? So therefore, we see Lord Shiva as he is described in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. He is the greatest devotee. So the devotees, we worship all the devotees who are more advanced than us, right, who are close to Krishna. So he is a pure devotee. He's a very exalted devotee. And because he controls false ego, then as a senior devotee, we say to him, please, I have a lot of problem with my false ego. Right? It's giving me a big problem. Right? So please help me to get rid of this false ego. False ego is the number one problem. Right? Because we want to enjoy separate from Krishna. So if you pray to Lord Shiva like that, you know, Lord Shiva, you are a very great Vaishnava. Please give me your mercy. Please remove the false ego. Help me to overcome my false ego. And then see what he does. Okay. Any other question or comment? So,
Is Shastra and Guru equally important, or is one more important?
The Guru, Sada, and Shastra, it is said, is a three-way checking system, like that. So that each one is equally important, because if the guru deviates, right, then we can say it seems the guru has deviated. So how do we know the guru has deviated? Because we check with the other two. It says in Shastra he should not do like that, and Sadhu is also telling us he is doing wrong. If Sadhu seems to deviate, then Guru and Shastra check him, keep him in control. And then Guru and Sadhu are there because sometimes someone will say, oh, it says this in the Shastra. You know, someone will quote something. They'll say, oh, you know, Prabhupada said that, or they'll say, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, it says that, or they'll say, you know, something like that. So Guru and Sadhu says, so where is it? Like that. So the three of them are equally important. You can't dispense of one of them. You need all three. If you lose one, then the system breaks down. Like that. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yeah. Any other question or comment?
Then, what is the difference between sadhu and guru?
Guru means the person who you fully surrender to. It means that all of his instructions, you must follow them. You must take them to heart and follow them. That's guru. Guru means the person who, whatever he says, any instruction, you take it fully. Sadhu means you will take the instructions as your guidance in life. But you may not go to the sadhu for every single instruction that you need. Guru will give you every single instruction you need. He will give you whatever he says, you must follow it. Sadhu, not that you don't follow sadhu, but sadhu means his instructions are there in general. But in terms of applying the instructions of the Shastra, or applying the instructions of the Guru, sorry, implying the instructions of the Sadhu or implying the instructions of the Shastra, then the Guru gives you specific instructions on how to apply those instructions.
So at the same time, a Guru can be a Sadhu for someone else?
Your Guru is a Sadhu. Your Guru cannot be a Sadhu. If your Guru is not a Sadhu, he's not a Guru. Mm. No, because if you say Shiksha Guru, then he's not Sadhu, then he's Guru. Shiksha Guru means Guru. Because it points out that the Shiksha Guru and the Diksha Guru are equal. As soon as you call someone Guru, this is why you have to be very careful. Right? Because as soon as you call someone Guru, as soon as you accept someone as Guru, you must follow everything they say. Right? Otherwise they're not Guru. Don't call them Guru. Don't say, oh, here's my Shiksha Guru, here's my Shiksha Guru. Don't say that. Because Guru means you must follow whatever they say. Right, so therefore, we can have many gurus, but then you have to follow everything they say. Sadhu means you will get general instructions. It's like you come to Bhagavatam class and so many sadhus will speak, and you'll hear the general instructions. But then how to specifically apply them for you, you have to approach the guru. Does it make sense? Okay. Any other question or comment? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki.